It is Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. You're welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. Coming up on the show today, DePaul have a dark report on homelessness and human trafficking. We hear from that very shortly. The Tuam bypass closure causes traffic chaos in the town. There is funding for community centres in Newcastle and Moycullen announced over the weekend. The Corch Festival kicks off in earnest tomorrow. The Green Party had their convention. We get reaction from that locally. It's Cancer Awareness Week for young people. As well as that, there's an art sale for Jack and Jill. All that plus lots of more coming up in the programme, including some live music, Galway greats and the sports preview at the earlier time of 10:45 today. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. If you want to get a comment into the programme today, you can on our numbers. They are 086 38 33 553. That's our text and WhatsApp number. You can phone Ava on reception on 091 77 0077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Wherever you are this morning, I hope you had a brilliant weekend. There's lovely sun shining. Make the most of the good weather, but do make sure you are safe during it as well. Now, though, I want to get straight into this morning because I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Dermot Murphy, the Director of Services and Development with DePaul. Dermot, good morning. And thank you for joining us on the programme today, Dermot. Dermot, this report you have from DePaul, it's quite stark. You've provided accommodation and support specialist service for women who are trafficking victims. And just talk to us about the findings in your report today.
Yes, so in partnership with a UK-based charity called The Passage, DePaul completed a piece of research assessing what the current state of play was with regards to victims of trafficking and homeless services. And what we found is, firstly, that there are victims of trafficking who are living in homeless services. And secondly, that we're missing opportunities to support and identify those people, as we don't have any particular training, expertise or support mechanisms to identify and support those victims of trafficking.
Okay, what are the most stark findings from the report and what have you determined from it?
Well, one of the most stark findings from the report is that, you know, homeless services currently aren't equipped to identify and support victims of trafficking. We are calling on politicians and decision makers to include homeless organisations in the action plan to combat human trafficking and modern day slavery. We think that would be a big part of trying to address some of the issues. One of the other things, John, that we're seeing in the report and is very evident when we look around is the lack of appropriate accommodation for those victims of trafficking, both for men and women. These people that are victims of trafficking, they're incredibly vulnerable. Like they're coming from maybe outside of Ireland, or they may be Irish themselves, but there's various types of human trafficking. Another term for it is modern-day slavery. So you're talking about people who would be, in essence, indentured into working, not paid if they're coming from another country. Maybe their passport's been taken. Most people would understand it from the perspective of sex working and things like that, but there are various other examples of people in who are victims of trafficking, if you will, John.
There's a lot of work being done in this regard in terms of human trafficking at an EU level. Are we doing enough in this country to help stop it?
Well, I think Aircall and using the report to shine a light on this, Aircall is for more to be done. We know that there's a need to roll out the national referral mechanism that will support the identification and referral of victims of trafficking to appropriate services. Currently, anybody who's identified as a victim of trafficking, generally, the way they'll get support is where the Gardaí have identified them as a victim of trafficking, and that needs to be expanded to other organisations on the call face who are working with people who may be trafficked on a day-to-day basis. We know there's a lack of training for staff particularly at the call face, as it relates to both identifying victims of trafficking and supporting victims of trafficking. And we know that there's a need to increase and enhance accommodation. You know, at the start of this report, that DePaul do provide one of the only services that specialises in supporting victims of trafficking, and we work with female victims of trafficking in that service. It's the only one of its kind in Ireland, so more definitely needs to be done, but I think both our statutory and NGO partners are eager to get that done.
Mm. And you mentioned there that the difficulties facing homeless organisations and different charities and NGOs in terms of managing the situation with trafficking. Is that training for the organisations in question? Is it more power on the ground to them? What more needs to be done in that regard?
Well, it's both, John. I think what we need is we need specialised training to be able to identify victims of trafficking, because there is a bit of work to understand what a victim of trafficking is. And then secondly, we need the training to ensure that we're supporting people who are victims of trafficking. It's incredibly traumatising. You're talking about situations where people may not identify themselves as victims of trafficking, or if they do, they may be incredibly scared to challenge or step away from their trafficker or the place that they're currently in. So a lot of work needs to be done to ensure that all organisations are trauma informed and that there's an approach taken that can support people to move away and escape from, you know, being trafficked. I think the other part that I mentioned, John, was the national referral mechanism. And what I'm talking about there is that there is a proposal and piece of legislation going through at the moment with regards to a national referral mechanism that will expand the number of organisations that can identify someone that's a victim of trafficking. And once they're identified, they can get the wraparound services that are necessary to help them both escape and to heal, if you will.
Is part of this as well interpretation and interpreters, in terms of some of these people might be coming from parts of the world where English is not their first or second language, for that matter?
Well, interpretation is always an issue, particularly where you're working with people where English isn't the mother tongue. But I think, you know, there are enough supports in place. And, you know, DePaul, for example, we work with quite a few migrants in different areas, and we have, you know, specialist interpretation supports that we bring in as is necessary. I think it's always a barrier, and I think, you know, the way to think of the barriers here, John, would be that if you have someone that is not from Ireland, for example, it doesn't matter where they're from, whether English is the first language, second language, or otherwise, that, you know, they're increasingly more vulnerable to understanding our systems, our structures, and understanding what supports are there. I think the lack of English being a forced language in some cases just further compounds those barriers.
Mm. Now, there are huge pressure on these types of services as well, because homelessness figures are at a record high. In terms of keeping these people safe when they do come into providers like yourselves in DePaul, Dermot, what measures are in place? Are there gender-specific accommodation? What sort of safety guards do you put in place there?
So to be really clear, John, there's literally one service in the country for victims of trafficking. It's ran by DePaul, and it was set up in partnership with the Department of Children, who have responsibility for this. Pardon me. And it's very much it's a pilot program. It was to show that this can be done. I think within DePaul, in general, in our homeless services, we try to take a trauma-informed approach. We try and ensure that our environments are safe, they're well-staffed, that there's plenty of systems and structures in place to mitigate and minimise against the impact that people can face when they're coming into homelessness. That being said, we're talking about this report today, which has told us clearly that there are victims of trafficking who are ending up in homelessness, and there are victims of trafficking who are falling between the cracks and not being identified because they're in homeless services and we're not necessarily part of the ecosystem, if you will, for identifying and supporting victims of trafficking. So we would suggest that any victim of trafficking that's ending up in homelessness shouldn't. That's not the appropriate environment for them. you know, homeless services are there for people who, you know, are in essence homeless or are without accommodation and need a specific set of supports to get out of homelessness. We're victims of trafficking. You're talking about people who, you know, may have no infrastructure around them. They won't have any social infrastructure. Potentially, they may be coming from another country. They may not have access to their passport anymore because that's been taken off them by a trafficker. They may be suffering a significant amount of violence and intimidation. And then there are cases, John, of, you know, people being locked in rooms for several months at a time, very little time out of rooms. You know, we're talking about very stark and harrowing situations here.
Finally, Dermot, can you put into context for us how bad this is in Ireland? Because I know that you have your own report out, and there was also a report from Mary Immaculate College in Limerick, which has suggested that the true figure of those trafficked into Ireland may be up to 38% higher than previously thought. How big is this problem?
It's a significant problem. I think the reality of it is, Sean, we don't know. When we think of, you know, a crime such as human trafficking, you know, as I said, another phrase for it is modern day slavery. This is not something that's reported widely. Also, you know, getting convictions is incredibly difficult, specifically because of the criminal nature of the cases and the various nebulous nature of building a case. So the guards really struggle to get as many convictions as they'd like in this area. I think it is fair to say that this is underreported. We certainly see within our report that there are missed opportunities to identify victims of trafficking and support those victims of trafficking. So I would say that the number is significantly higher than is currently reported.
All right, Dermot Murphy, the Director of Services and Development with DePaul, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks, John.
What are your thoughts on this issue? Get them into us straight away on our text and WhatsApp number, phone interception, or email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. I want to move to an issue locally that has been causing quite a stir on social media since this morning. I'm joined online by local councillor in the Tuam area, Councillor Donna Killalade. Donna, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well. This is part of a planned closure of the Tuam bypass, which really kicked into effect in earnest this morning. It's caused a lot of consternation in the town as traffic in both directions moves through the town and puts it effectively to a gridlock for a lot of people.
Well, it was certainly gridlock this morning. I experienced that myself at around 8:15 as I headed to work there from town. This was, I suppose, flagged about from about 2 weeks ago onwards, and it was in the media and locally and so on. But I suppose, first of all, to say, I suppose that the commentary on this, is there anything that could be done that could have maybe prevented the full closure of the bypass? And I suppose the answer to that is no. And I suppose to explain to your listeners, John, why. And there's a dip that came in the road there, both sides and all four carriages, started to happen the last number of months. And it's the decision of TII, and indeed not Galway County Council, but the decision of TII was to take that up and to refill in and make good that dip that started to come. So there was a little bit of a sink in it. Now, in order to do that, they had to pull down the central reservation, which is for the drivers that are used to driving that road. It's the wiring that stops that's kind of a crash deterrent in the centre of it. And once that comes down, they have to, for safety reasons with workers on the road, they have to really shut down the full four lanes for that, in particular when the middle central reservation has to come down to accommodate the works. I suppose it's tough on people. Can I just maybe advise, and then particularly for myself that got caught in it as well, look, you'd want to allow another 40 minutes to get into town. There was certainly tailbacks there all the way, probably out the far as the Milltown Road. I know at one stage back to Marley, maybe at the school peak traffic. So maybe try and allow that extra bit of time. Definitely coming in the Galway Road, it was out as far as Courtney's Cross or where Al Hayes' garage is, for anyone that knows it. And it is, it's hard on people to, I suppose, maybe for those in particular that didn't see the notification of it. It's very hard on those. But I'll just allow the extra bit of time, take your time. There are people who are very courteous in the road. You know, I'm trying to get out myself this morning, and people are letting me in and out. That's good. Now, I do know that they are working hard on it. The weather looks good. it looks promising, and they may finish early. So it may be a case that it won't go till Friday. And if you don't mind, John, I'll update you again maybe tomorrow, mid-morning on that. I'll just drop you a text message to say, look, we've been talking to the engineers on site. We are on target. They are saying Friday. But, you know, this may be, it mayn't be as long as wanted because the weather, I suppose, wasn't factored in when the original decision was made to close it down for the full week. So I think there may be some good news here towards tomorrow or Wednesday.
Okay, you mentioned the reason for these works as, what, a dip in the road. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, part of the road there, just as you come to the Ballygaddy Junction, if you're driving from the motorway site, both sides of the road, there was a bit, it had started to sink in it. Not anything major, but it had to be addressed. It wasn't a major concern other than the fact that it's taken a huge volume of traffic, as the people in the town centre will see this morning. But it just needed to be done, and in order to do that, this had to happen. But just had to be closed down and get it right.
This is a relatively new road, though.
Yeah.
It's very soon for something like this to be happening on the project if it was done to all standards. What's caused this dip, or have they evaluated that, or do they know?
I have no idea, but when I do find out, I'll let you know, John. They will investigate it as part of the exploratory works, but they have to plane down the road and they have to build it back up again in that small section of it. I don't know the reason for it. I would only assume the volume of traffic. I think there was... The last count that was done, I think there was in around the 26,000 traffic movements per day in it. It was just huge. Obviously, it was built in some soft ground in certain areas. It was, anyone that knows that particular area would know that there is a little bit of soft ground around there. And they had to dig down to get down to the ground. So maybe that might have something to it. I'm not an engineer.
I know.
I don't work for TII. Yeah. But I'll find out, John, and I'll come back and I'll certainly let you and the listeners know what the issue was. But as it's going to be made safe. And the important thing here is that the road is made safe, kept safe. And the central reservation, now that it has to be done, that's the wire roping, is going to be redone as well. So it's important that we keep the road safe. We hear enough of deaths along that particular N17 and those stretches, so it's important that we keep the new bits of road as safe as we can.
And the reason it wasn't put down to one lane, that's all safety as well.
Well, my understanding is from talking to TII, once the central reservation had to come up, all four lanes had to be closed. It just had to be done because they couldn't allow workers there and have traffic coming both sides, even at a calmed measurement. And when they're going in with road planers and big heavy equipment like that, it just has to be done. I'm sure your listeners and indeed yourself, John, would know, going back through the years, we've always ever and only closed one lane at a time when we were doing essential maintenance. But this is major repair in one section of it. It's not really essential maintenance. So I think it's bear with the people that are doing it. They're going to work hard and fast to get it finished. I would doubt very much we'll go into Friday, and I'll confirm that with you tomorrow, as I've stated, John, if that's okay.
All right, that's fine. And the bottom line, so 40 minutes extra possibly to journeys both ways?
It's difficult to do it for school, but definitely for those going to work, I'd say allow 40 to 45 minutes. You know, just a bit of comfort in that because, we're conscious of exams coming up and people, parents wanting to get their children in for maybe there's extra study time and stuff in the schools. But just allow that extra little bit of time. If the weather stays fine, maybe encourage the older students to maybe walk or get the walk or cycle or maybe something like that. Just to take a few cars off the town centre would be great as well. But I won't tell any parents how their children should go to school. It's not my job. But look, it is what it is. Allow the extra time. Everything will be fine in a few days.
Councillor Donal Clay, thank you for that update. And do let us know if that does get finished before Friday as well.
I will, John. Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. Still to come on the programme today, we've lots to come. We have that great announcement of funding for different community centres across Galway City and County. And we look at the Corch Festival, which gets underway tomorrow. Join us for that and more to come.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.
Good morning and welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. To your comment lines very quickly. Morning, John. Tuam is literally gridlocked on all approaches into the town. Crazy. That comes in from Danny. Another listener says, it shouldn't be fine on Monday morning when people are going to work. Schools stay after. Common sense and council equals disaster. It's actually TII who are doing those works in Tuam. And another listener says, hi, just wondering what has happened to a number of other issues. We'll get back to that later on in the programme as well. Right, we were joined in studio from our newsroom by Sarah Slevin. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you? Sorry about that.
You're okay. Thanks for joining us this morning. There was great announcements of funding for two community centres in the city and county, and you were at the one in Moycullen.
I was indeed. I'm actually only up the road from where the announcement was being made, so I tipped down to the local community, and Moycullen actually had the biggest amount that was announced for the whole entire country last weekend. So €6 million for a new community centre there in Moycullen, and then there was just over 4 million then for Newcastle as well. And both of these span like years and years of, you know, campaigns from the local community to get them a new centre. I was talking to someone who was doing basketball there, and they've actually no court. They've been having a basketball team. They've no court to play on. So this is big news for Moycullen anyway.
Vital facilities. Funding is one part of it, and then it'll take another years for tenders and stuff to go out and for the actual projects to be completed. But it's positive for the people of the area.
It definitely is. Look, the plans are there. I was on the website for the Moycullen Development Association over the weekend to see what their plans was, and Newcastle likewise as well have big plans for multifunctional facilities, sports halls, culture centres. The whole works will be there for them. A lot of facilities that they really do need for all the community events that they have.
Brilliant. Tell us who you spoke to in Moycullen.
So I spoke to a few people. I actually just spoke to people who were involved in local clubs in the community. And then I spoke to Jimmy as well, who's the manager there at the Development Association. A few people then who just, and the local principal then as well.
Brilliant. Let's hear from them now.
Mr. Seamus O'Cage, Jimmy Keady, yes, for Papa Moycullen and Bannister and Sean Lass, Jeblin. So I'm a couple of talkers, I've seen Jeblin and those, because it's talker and more means to have legs. Then Moycullen, because Ian Dickon Law, so going. This is in the making for the last 25 years. A lot of hard work, a lot of people, a huge effort into working over the years and years. And we were disappointed a number of times, but just this year, seems that all our stars lined up properly for us, and we had a good application and a lot of hard work. We had a site of 25 acres. We planned commissioned there for the last number of years for a shovel ready project community centre.
And can you talk to me a bit about the planned project?
Well, this is a community centre, digital hub, a place for drama and all societies use it. And it's going to be a state-of-the-art building with best of ventilation, heating systems and walkways around it. It's going to be for the future of Moycullen, for the kids actually, who probably haven't even grown up to see this, but it's for the future needs of the whole of Moycullen and the greater area. It'll have a main hall, it'll have two full-size courts in it. Have an arena that you can have up to 1,200 people standing up and 800 sitting down, and you can have concerts, you can have the endless, it's endless all you can have here.
My name's Aideen Malloy, I'm principal of Skullcombe and Tirini in Moycullen, and yeah, it's a massive day for the community. We've waited a very long time. I'm 47 years living here in Moycullen, and we are 47 years plus waiting for a community centre, so it's a big deal for us today.
And obviously it's a very big funding amount, it's the biggest that was announced today in the country. Does that kind of make you feel positive about what's going to be built here?
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many fantastic clubs in the community already punching above their weight. Without the basketball club doesn't even have a basketball court. We have so many different needs in the community that that $6 million will be well spent and is well needed.
And we've been looking for a place to play basketball in Moycullen for generations, literally generations. I live in the area and I'm the treasurer of the club, and I'm also the announcer at the matches, so anybody who goes to watch Moycullen will hear me cheering on the team with a microphone, which is very handy.
This is the biggest funding amount being announced today then. There's a few others around the country. Does that kind of make you feel very positive about what's going to be built here?
Yes, definitely. I mean, $6 million is an awesome amount of money. Last weekend we were in Knocknacara, shaking the bucket in the supermarket, and you know we raised a couple of thousand, which is fantastic, but $6 million. We'd be packing a lot of bags to get $6 million, let me tell you that much, for a lot of time. But so it's fantastic. It's a great announcement. It's great for the whole community. And I think everyone's delighted.
Cáda Maclanacha, Pagardigas. I think it's the only word I can really use to sum up what a great day it is for the people of Moycullen.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost surreal that we're actually at this stage. We've been in the more than Newcastle, we've been fighting for this for years and years. And years being turned down, being just fighting, and to actually get to stage now, it's just incredible. But again, in the same early run, this goes back to everybody in the area who've been working not just with ourselves but for Purple Cullen, but with their own groups. We had over 50 groups supporting this application, and it's to them really the credit of this day is going.
The amount of work that has gone into this over an unbelievable amount of time for McQuillan to finally have its own community centre. I asked the question earlier on, is it job done or is it just the start of the next job? And I got a feeling it's the latter.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I know we'd say my fellow directors and all the groups that we've been meeting over the last couple of years, I know they're all fed up with me saying, you know, the next stage, we get to get this stage, this step. But I think we've reached the stage of no return today. And there is a huge amount of work before us. But we'll get there. And again, we've got Ujrasna Gaeltachta on board as the lead organisation. Part of the funding structure of this was that the local organisation couldn't actually apply for it, had to go through a lead organisation, which makes sense. I'll tell you, I'm glad that we're not directly managing this project ourselves. And we're hugely thankful to Ujrasna. They put huge resources into it and huge support. And so the next step now, we'll be sitting down with the Ujrasna again. We'll be sitting down with our own communities. It's huge funding. We still need to do some fundraising ourselves, and so we can gear into all that now is starting next week.
Senator Sean Kyne, McCullen.
Sean, as a McCullen man, this is a very special day for you to see your area finally get a community centre of its own, the highest allocation of any funds in the country. It's been amazing work done by yourselves, but now it's great to see the Minister here to make that announcement.
Absolutely, it's a great day for the community of McCullen. They fought for a long time to have a community centre and basic facilities that we need, and we will now have a state-of-the-art facility in McCullen, in the community, in the village. I'd like to acknowledge the work of Minister Heather Humphreys, and Ferbert Public McCullen, the McCullen Community Development Association volunteers who have been working for a long number of years to provide this basic infrastructure. We have a site, we have planning, it's behind Derry Fay Housing Estate and on Chagallagilling Nursing Home there in the old Kilrainy Woods. We have planning permission, so we're shovel ready. The fund was established, and I fought hard within government with Leo Bradker, Heather Humphreys, Michael McGrath to establish a community centre fund for new build community centres. So it's a great day for my colleagues.
Our reporter John Mulligan was also in Newcastle.
Heather Humphreys, Minister for Rural and Community Development. There's a lot of hard work has gone into both of these applications. I want to commend the community in McCullen. I want to commend the community here in Newcastle. They have done Trojan work in putting together this project. They've had a vision for many, many years, and I'm delighted to have worked with the local Oireachtas members here in Newcastle and in McCullen to make sure that funding is provided for these two absolutely vital projects, because what these are two community centres, and we all know that our community centres are at the heart of our towns and our villages. If you don't have a community centre, you don't have a heart, and you need that. So I'm delighted that as part of today's announcement that over 10 million has been provided to Galway alone.
Hello, Seamus Davey here. I'm chairperson of the Newcastle Combined Community Association, NCCACLG. It's been an excellent day for us. We've been dreaming about this day for many's a year and many's a false dawn, but eventually, thankfully, we've been able to get the funding that we need to develop a community centre, which is so badly needed for the Newcastle Dangan area of the city.
Nearly 4.4 million allocated, and given, you know, it had to be shovel ready, everything had to be nearly put in place. I mean, it's now, thankfully, there is nothing that needs to be done regarding planning permission or anything like that. Maybe a tender needs to be got for it, but that's all.
Yes, indeed. The community funds that were collected there paid for the full design costs. So we are shovel ready. We have our planning permission, and we have all the design drawings ready to go to tender at this stage. And hopefully we can get it accelerated with the cooperation of Galway City Council and the Minister.
What kind of time scale are we talking about between the spade going into the ground and the opening of the doors?
Well, we'd hope that the spade will be able to go into the ground once the contractor is appointed there in probably about August of this year. And then the building will take about a year and 3 months, I'd say. So hopefully before Christmas 2025, we'll have a community centre here in Newcastle.
I'm Michael Kelly, and I'm from Snipe Lawn in Newcastle. I'm here for the announcement today. My dad, Tom Kelly, had been very involved in the long campaign to make this happen for Newcastle. He didn't live to see the outcome, but I'm sure he'd have been delighted that this decision has been made. The history of this whole thing is, I'd say, as old as the community itself, from the buildings that happened in or projects that happened in the 1970s. People have been talking about having a community centre in Newcastle ever since that time, and I suppose in a way it emphasises just how important it is to plan these things properly when they're being built in the first place. But it's really good news for Newcastle, which is a place that has a very big institutional footprint, where the community has been under pressure in many ways for quite a long time. It's finally very positive to see that they'll have somewhere where they're, they can encounter each other, they can do things together, they can experience themselves as a community properly.
Michael, as a resident of Newcastle, and having seen, the point was made to me, this is something that you've worked towards, the people of Newcastle have worked towards for 30 years, to see it finally come to fruition. Is it the end of a journey, or is it the beginning of another journey now with the construction of the centre itself?
It's both, because this has been a very long journey to this point. And then when you hear the funding, announced and promised and become a reality, you realise that it is really only just the very early stages of something else. So I guess what everybody involved now will be focused on is making sure that what happens on the site adjacent to Cree here is the very best possible outcome for the community. That'll require a lot of local effort, but it'll be an effort very much worth the while.
Mayor Howard, this is so, so important for the people of Newcastle to have this now fully in place, that we're going to have this wonderful facility built here soon.
It's a real honour as Mayor to be here to welcome the Minister, but I'm just so delighted for the committee members, for the board of directors and everyone that's pushed this project over the last number of years.
That work, 30 years in the making for Newcastle, the same for Muckwillan, now means that they have much needed facilities in their own backyard.
Most certainly. Newcastle has lost a lot of amenities over the course of the last number of years. We've seen the population grow. Equally in Muckwillan, the population has grown year on year. So it's important that population growth is supported by sufficient infrastructure. And this morning, €10 million of an investment for both Galway City and County in Newcastle and Muckwillan. It's really sizable, and we're so grateful for it.
How important is it going to be for those communities to have these facilities in place?
Community centres are the lifeblood of any community, for sports clubs, charities, organisations, or for people just elderly or young to just go in and have a cup of coffee and meet neighbours. It's a significant investment, and it's going to do so much for each of the communities. They're generational projects that will be here for generations to enjoy to come.
Government Chief Whip Hildegard Nocton, a Minister of State in the Department of Education. And this, as you say, is a real example of local communities setting out a vision for a new community centre, designing it from the ground up, and then working with the likes of myself and my colleague, Senator Sean Kyne, Mayor Eddie Hoare, and other Oireachtas members and councillors. But the problem was that there was no funding for new community centres. So we met with Minister Heather Humphreys a year ago. She is over rural affairs, so it's rural areas, but she created this specific funding for new communities, which will be in urban areas like Newcastle. So a fantastic example of Minister Heather Humphreys responding to the huge work and dedication that has happened over 20 years for Newcastle Dangan area. And now they'll be able to see a fantastic new community centre here beside the Cree Centre off Thomas Hines Road.
Noel Grealish, Independent TD for Galway West. As everybody knows that lives in this particular area here in Dangan, Newcastle, there's no facilities whatsoever for the people here, and this is absolutely brilliant news. As the chairman of the Newcastle Combined Community Centre Development Company, Seamus Davey, said here this morning, the people in Newcastle are mostly a retired community, and they've absolutely no facilities whatsoever, even to meet, as he said, and the minister said, to meet for a cup of tea. So this facility is very welcome here in the Newcastle area. And then as in the Muckwillan area, which is a new area, which is growing, major development taking place, a lot of young people, a lot of sporting organisations, and that facility is very much needed for the expansion of Mike Cullen. So when the decision was made by the Minister to grant aid both Newcastle Dangan and Mike Cullen, she looked at the two different groups of people, where in Newcastle Dangan they're mostly retired, and in Mike Cullen they're mostly a young population. So I think it's a win-win for all.
Yeah, great news for Newcastle and for Mike Cullen as well. Just a message in from one of our listeners in relation to Tuam.
Hi, can I just make a comment on the closing of the bypass in Tuam? I just live on the Marlow Road. It's a tiny little road. The traffic, a lot of the traffic is making the Marlow Road their bypass now. Just go easy on it, you know, take your time. There's a lot of small corners on it and whatever. Yeah, and cars are absolutely flying on this road today, and they really shouldn't be. Thank you.
Yeah, and if you want to get a voice note or a comment into us, do on our text and WhatsApp line. That's 086 38 33 553. Phone Ava on reception on 091 77 0077, and email comments at goibayfm.ie. We're coming back and speaking about the 39th Cork International Festival of Literature, which returns this week next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road, a new way to car shop.
Good morning, welcome to Galway Talks with John Morley. I have across me now Manuela Moser, the director of the Cork International Festival, because it is the 39th Cork International Festival of Literature, which is getting underway tomorrow. Manuela, good morning. You must be all very excited ahead of tomorrow.
Hi John, thanks for having me. We are ecstatic, excited, and I think we can't wait for tomorrow to finally come around. We've been planning this festival for a really long time, and I'm just so happy that it's about to happen.
Absolutely. Now, it is one of Europe's oldest book festivals, and it's a leading voice for literature both internationally and across Ireland. Talk to us about what's happening over the next few days.
Yeah, so over the next few days, from Tuesday through to Sunday, we've got lots of events happening in the McLally Theatre, Antiviac, the Town Hall Theatre, and a few other places across the town. So we've got poetry readings and storytelling events and kind of events with lots of novelists and fiction writers, like Paul Lynch, who just won the Booker Prize, and Mike McCormack. And so we've got lots of events like that, and we've got lots of conversations, I guess, with writers and people who have written non-fiction books, and we've got workshops happening throughout the week in the O'Donoghue Centre, which will be really fantastic. And yeah, that's kind of the gist of it, I guess.
And you have a lot of big names and big topics to cover over the week.
Yeah, we do. We have lots of big names. Obviously, I mentioned Paul Lynch and Mike McCormack there. We've got John Banville as well. And we have Paul Murray and Una Mannion, who are doing an event on Friday afternoon at 5:30, which will be really fantastic. We have Sinead Gleeson coming over to do a couple of things. And we have Rita Ann Higgins and Elaine Feeney, who are doing the kind of poetry grand finale on the Sunday evening at 7:30, which I think will be really, really fantastic.
In terms of topics that will be covered over the course of the few days, what sort of social issues are you looking at in the festival? I know it's varied and wide-ranging.
Absolutely. We have lots of social issues covered, actually, in the festival this year, and lots of things to do with Ireland as well. So we've got events with the organisation Black and Irish, who wrote this book called Black and Irish, which kind of brings together lots of the it advocates for the Black community in Ireland, and this book is really amazing. So we've got Leon and Brianna, who are coming to talk about that book, and then we've got conversations with Claire Wills and Molly Hennigan about kind of generational trauma and mother and baby homes and the kind of Irish state's treatment of women. We've got talks about the Troubles and the housing crisis, kind of lots of very quite serious topical events, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess another one about kind of like crime and the crime, true crime genre, which is obviously kind of juicy and fun, as well as being quite...
I know there are some political topics covered. One in particular that caught my eye is the Palestinian Voices, which is taking place in the McLally Theatre on Sunday, the 28th of April at 11 o'clock. Important, I think, to give all people of all sides a voice, and you're giving Palestinian Voices their slot there in the McLally on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that will be a really powerful and kind of valuable conversation to be had during the festival. And we also have one of the people speaking at that is Rafif Sadar, and she'll be performing her kind of performance poetry, Let It Be a Tale, on the Saturday. And I think the Palestinian event on Sunday is sold out, but the Saturday one actually has a few tickets left. So it's Let It Be a Tale. It's a kind of performance poetry with music, and it's in memory of the Palestinian poet and educator Rafit Alaria.
Brilliant. Now, I've mentioned, and we've mentioned a few of the names like Elaine Feeney and Rita Higgins. It's a nice mix of Galway talent on show throughout the festival. I know it's an international festival, but you're really hitting hard on all the Galway talent we have locally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Galway talent is of international kind of standard and acclaim. So it's not difficult to kind of find the amazing Galway writers and put them on stages with people from all around the world. We're really delighted to have Mary Costello as well doing an event on Sunday, and Adele Coffey, Caelan Hughes, Owen de Bardoon is doing an event as well, Maeve McDonnell. I guess, yeah, there's so many writers in Galway. It's wonderful to be able to kind of put them on this platform.
And I know this year's festival is the main focus, but next year Corch turns 40. And I know there's big plans in the offing for that. Can you tell us anything?
I can't tell you anything right now, but I would say to follow us on social media to kind of keep updated, because yeah, we've got a lot of things planned for next year.
Brilliant. Manuela Moser, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. And we do have a pair of tickets to give away each day this week for events happening at the Corch Festival. And for today, it is the finale poetry reading. If you want to be a chance of winning that, text in book and your name and location to 086 38 33 553, and do so now. That's book to 086 38 33 553. You're laughing at me there, Manuela. What's so funny about that?
I think the word book is just a great word to write in. I was kind of writing my speeches yesterday for the whole festival, and I was kind of going, books are great. Books are great. So, yeah.
And there are, briefly, a mixture of stuff for people who like fiction and non-fiction. It's very mixed, the type of literature unfolds.
Absolutely. I guess it's good to kind of... literature is wide-ranging, and I think that it's wonderful to kind of get people who spend their lives writing and thinking about topical issues together to kind of think about things and discuss them and see what we can learn from them.
Brilliant. Manuela Moser, the director of the Corch International Festival of Literature, thank you for joining us, and best wishes for your 39th festival, and we look forward to hearing what's happening next year for the big celebration, the Ruby on the 40th. So thank you for joining us on Galway Talk. Still to come on the programme today, we're looking at the Green Party convention with Senator Pauline O'Reilly. We'll be discussing a number of issues with her as well in relation to coal caps for people going under cancer treatment and the protests outside Minister O'Gorman's house as well. So all that plus lots more coming up after news.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.